This episode is sponsored by Cards Against Humanity. They asked us not to read an ad. Enjoy!
It is a Chicagoverse podcast on the Dynasty Podcast Network, featuring interviews with Chicago's premier artists and industry, and creatives and culture leaders. Hosted by Haima Black. Welcome to Chicago.
Haima Black, live with Tim McElrath and Joe Principe of Rise Against. How are you guys doing?
Great. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, doing well.
Yeah, man. Mm-hmm. You guys are busy. Like, you always are a busy band, but today especially, you're really busy, so thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us. I'm glad we got to sit down.
Yeah, man. So we're here in Chicago. I know you guys are always all over the place. How does it feel to be back home?
Especially on, like, such an amazing, beautiful day, because we only get so many of them here, so it's cool to be, like, down here in the city, and everyone's out, and the sun's out, and it's just, like, I don't know. It's good to be here. It's bittersweet to have to leave for tour tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, you know, when this weather rolls around, you know, it's like you just gear up for, like, cool, finally good weather, let's go outside. And now we're going to go spend it inside a tour bus.
Yeah, I've been driving around with the top off my Jeep all week, hence the tan.
Nice.
So, yeah, but it'll be at least we're playing outdoors most of the
summer. Yeah, you're right,
absolutely.
So,
oh, yeah.
There we go. Yeah, and so right now, like, we're kind of on the verge of this huge thing. Tomorrow, the new record Wolves comes out, and you're launching this tour with Deftones across the summer. Like, does it kind of feel like the day before Christmas for you guys? Like, when you were a kid, and you're like, it's tomorrow.
Yeah. It's like Christmas is kind of, like, different because, like, you don't know what you're going to get, so it's like you're the one. I imagine it's kind of like, because this is, like, a gift that we've prepared for, like, a long time. It's like we know what's going on inside there. We did it months ago, and we've just been anxious to have people hear it and check it out. So it's kind of like we've done everything we can do now, and now we get to, like, let it all kind of unfold and let the world open it up and check it out. So, but it's
your Christmas present.
Exactly. Yeah. It's our gift. Yeah. We'll see how well it's received.
Yeah. And the tour is starting in Chicago. Was that your guys doing? Did you tell Chino, like, look,
man,
this is where it's happening.
Yeah, and he was like, as long as we play a bend on 4th of July.
Yeah, that was the deal.
Yeah.
It just kind of worked out that way. I don't think we've ever started a tour on a record release day.
Absolutely. I think you're right. Yeah, yeah.
So it's definitely a happy accident.
Yeah.
To my knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it was really... It's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm stoked. Because the guys have been here all week, and we were in Rockford, Illinois last night, which was the only arena available in the Chicagoland area for us to set up all our gear, apparently.
Really?
Yeah. I know, like, because all of our crews from all over the country, and so they're like, have you guys heard of Rockford, Illinois? And we're like, we have. Why? You know, so we were there just last night till, like, midnight, just, like, hanging out and playing all our stuff. But it's nice to do it all kind of local here in Chicago, because the opening days are the first days before you head out on tour. There's just a lot of work to do.
Oh, I can't even imagine. Mm-hmm. I mean, even today, like, you've got the in-store at Reckless. You were just doing a thing with 101 KQX. So, like, you guys are everywhere.
Absolutely. And our crew is right now, like, working on all of our gear and making sure that Friday night goes off. So it's just sort of one of those things. A lot of moving pieces. And so it's cool to be at least to be able to, like, do it here in Chicago.
Yeah. Now, the new record, Wolves, is coming out tomorrow. And this is the 8th record. Rise Against, you guys you've done records before. You've done this process. You're not new to it. So, like, with this album, like, what sets it apart for you guys? Like, what makes this a different experience?
I mean, I think for us, first and foremost, we switched kind of the production team, the mixer, and that was huge because Nick Raskulinex produced the record. His process is kind of polar opposite from Bill Stevenson, who's done 5 records with us. And Nick is definitely a more of a live in the moment and don't try not to overthink everything, you know, so much, which is hard for us because that's kind of that's all we know. Like, we want to make sure everything's, you know, perfect. So we kind of, like, put everything under the microscope. And this record was a little bit, keep the train moving kind of thing.
Was that kind of what it was like in the old days, in, like, the Fat Records days? Like, was it a little bit looser back then and like more kind of raw?
Yeah, I
would say, always that.
So the 2 records we did on Fat, both were very different. And so, like, the first one, we were like, this brand new band that our producer didn't know what kind of band we were. The fans didn't know what kind of band we were. And I was at the 4 of us didn't know what kind of band we were. We were kind of figuring it out, just groping around in the dark. Just like, here, we had these songs, and, like, I was doing what I was doing over them. So it's like, sometimes it was, you know, I feel like if you were to like just be listening on a Rise Against Practice, it's like, well, here's Ever Changing. They're clearly a pop punk band. Oh, right. But here's Stained Glass and Marble. I guess they're a hardcore band. Or here's Alive and Well. Maybe they're just like a straight punk band. So it's like, we were carving out our identity. You know, right. We were figuring out who we were. So by the time we hit our second record with Bill, I feel like we had a better idea of who we were. I always think of our second record as like our third record. Like I feel like, yeah, like in yeah. the time that a normal band would have gone into the studio to do a second record, we got back in the van and did another year of touring. You know, and so we were a different band by time. And then that was with Bill Stevenson, our second record. So it was, we were far more prepared back then, I would say.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because you didn't have the money to mess around. You just you had a finite amount of days. It was like, you got to nail it.
I remember doing demos for Revolutions Per Minute, and Fat Mike called me. He goes, oh, God, thank God this record's going to be fucking awesome. He's like, because you never know what a band's second record and what's going to happen. He's like, but you guys, like, this is going to be, it's going to be great. And I feel like we also, because what Tim mentioned, we are kind of all over the map style-wise. It kind of set us up to do whatever we
absolutely,
wanted,
yeah.
you know,
right,
like,
right. Mm-hmm.
which is rad. You know, we're not kind of, you know, confined to one.
Totally. Because we, you know, like a lot of, like most people, we listen to all kinds of music. So I love mm-hmm. a good pop song as much as I love a good hardcore song. And so it was nice not to have ever painted ourselves in a corner where it would be weird for us to do this or weird for us to do this. Instead, it's like we felt very, it gave us license to do kind of whatever we wanted.
Well, yeah. And so Tim and I talked about this in Illinois Entertainer a little bit, but it's like, you know, Rise Against, nobody ever talks about the fact that you guys write ballads as well.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's just like, they're this like hardcore activist, but then there's like, it's a lot of personal songs in there as well. And
yeah.
and it does feel like you guys, I think, are a lot more versatile than I think maybe people kind of like give you credit for. Does it ever feel like that?
No, you make a good point. I feel fortunate that we can do that, but I also feel like it's easy for somebody to kind of point out, like, to label, like, oh, political band, pop band, so we get the political band label. At least we did a lot more, maybe, like, 10 years ago.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Swing Life Away was written before Siren Song.
Absolutely. It was written during RPM. Actually, it was even before really? RPM. And Bill actually was like, you should put it on RPM.
Yeah.
On Revolutions Per Minute. And at that point, we couldn't wrap our head around the idea of playing an acoustic song. Like, we were playing dirty dives
right.
and doing 40-minute blasts of punk rock to, like, a sweaty, shirtless crowd. The idea of playing an acoustic song in the midst of that was, like, really strange. And so Bill's like, that's a good song. You should put that out, you know, or whatever on the record. And we're like, no way, dude. We're not putting this on the record. And then it wasn't until Punk Goes Acoustic, Fearless Records, Punk Goes Acoustic compilation, hit us up and said, we'd like to feature you on this. And we also couldn't wrap our head around doing an acoustic version of any existing Rise Against song.
Yeah.
And so the guys were like, what about that thing you wrote, you know, that like you played us?
Right.
And I was like, oh, actually, yeah, this would be perfect. We'll put it on that. And I think that first version was recorded with Bill at Blasting Room, maybe during the RPM sessions.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to say. And then it came out to like to little fanfare on the Punk Goes Acoustic comp. And then it slowly got wings. Like it slowly, you know, people started to hear it. And then when we finally did Siren Song a year or two later, again, like our A&R guy was like, what's that acoustic song? And I'm like, oh, it's just this thing. And he's like, you should put it on this record.
And that's wild.
So wild. And like, what's interesting to me about Rise Against career too is that Siren Song of the Counterculture was our major mm-hmm. label debut. In for all intents and purposes, it was our introduction or the mainstream world's introduction
right,
to
sure,
us.
Sure.
And the two biggest singles that propelled that release were two previously released songs.
That's pretty funny.
Give It All was already in a Rock Against Bush compilation
right.
that we had already put out a year before. It was an old song. And Swing Life Away was an old song that we recorded. And those are the two songs that record kind of, you know, that record went gold. And it was like off of songs that we'd already put out.
Like people could have already.
Yeah, yeah.
It's what, sorry, Rock Against Bush. That's just, I don't know if anyone said those words in a long time.
I know, right? Well, it occurred to me that this is our fourth president as a band.
Yeah,
we've been through
wild.
Four administrations, you know, all of which were 8-year administrations, I think. So, yeah. I mean, the two main ones, you know, I mean, like Bush
sure.
and Obama were 8 years. But we were right at the end of Clinton. And now we are into Beelzebub himself. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so I know that you and I kind of touched on this, Tim, but like Joe, too. I mean, and both of you, like, with this record, Wolves, is it too straightforward to say that it's a response to Trump? Is that too easy of an answer? Is that not even accurate? Or how do you view it? Because I think for a lot of people, they're just going to look at it and be like, oh, this is their Trump record.
I mean, I feel like it's not all that.
Right.
But there's definitely elements of that on the record. I mean, it's kind of like, how could there not be? I always describe Tim's lyric writing as he writes from a personal perspective. Mm. And that perspective deals with politics and it deals with relationships. That's why on a Rise Against record, we kind of cover all the bases. And it's hard to avoid politics.
Well, yeah. Especially right now.
Like, especially right now, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, everything right now feels political. Like, there's almost nothing that's... You buy paper towels and it's like, there's some way that that's political.
Totally. I mean, like, in the time that we've been talking right now, 10 insanely bullshit things have happened that we don't even know about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're going to...
When we turn this off and, like, check our phones, we're like, what?
Yeah, we're going to be like, how did...
Yeah, that's what's going to happen, like, this afternoon. Well, especially today. Today is a pretty significant day.
Today is a big day.
In history, probably. Right. But going back, like, you know, during the Bush administration, like, I wrote songs that I was hoping that would still be relevant years later because I realized that a guy like Bush is more than just a person. He's a creation of a lot of different ideologies, and there was going to be another Bush.
Right.
And so I wanted songs that could also apply to the environment that created somebody like Bush. You know, and I think that I'm glad we did because I think those songs are relevant today because that same ideology, like Bush is gone, but the ideology isn't
right,
gone.
It's still there.
I mean? And even Trump, like especially after today, he might be gone next week. But the ideology that put him in office will not disappear.
No, it doesn't end with him.
Exactly. And so it's like, I would love to have, we talked about this, but like I'd love to have songs that are treating the disease, not just the symptoms. And a guy like Trump is just kind of a symptom. You can't give him too much credit. You know what I mean?
No, he's just sort of the figurehead.
Yeah, he's kind of like the lucky bastard that was there when racist and sexist America decided to vote.
Yeah, there you go. There's the poll quote.
Sorry.
So along those lines, you know, since you guys are obviously a very active activist group, do you feel like the new generation that's coming to your shows, are they a better fit for the message of Rise Against maybe than the audiences you had before? Because they have access to so much more information, and you see so many young people marching. You see so many young people like creating petitions. Like it feels like activism has really caught on in a way that it maybe hasn't in a long, long time.
Yeah, I would say so. It's something that occurs to me. Like I feel like the one thing that Rise Against fights in our sort of our community of fans is just simply apathy. People are just like unplugged, and I feel like this generation, it's like almost simultaneously more unplugged, but then simultaneously more plugged in sometimes than ever before. Because I feel like it's sort of like that adage where you talk about like kids these days and the things that they learn at younger ages than we learned them, whether it's like swear words or sex or whatever, you know, like the kids seem like they're learning things at a younger age than we learned. I think that goes for politics too.
Oh yeah.
Like absolutely. I don't remember politics factoring into my 15, 16 year old life.
No, right. It was a thing like old people cared about for whatever reason.
Totally. I would have been hard pressed to tell you the difference between a Republican and a Democrat.
I knew who Bill Clinton was.
And right.
And that was period. That was the end.
Absolutely. Politics were not as sort of like hyper focused as they are now. And so the young people these days, for better or worse, are getting immersed into politics at a younger age than ever before. And to have candidates like Donald Trump be their first introduction to a party, you know what I mean? Like, that's a pretty stark introduction. They're learning, and that's the party. That's they put him in power. You know what I mean? Like, this is their guy that said, this is the best possible candidate we could produce. This is who we want in office. That's just the vote. That's what happens. And so when young people see, like, well, I'm trying to figure out what Democrats are and what Republicans are, what the right and what the left is. And when they see Trump, it's like, that will be the poster child for the right, for their generation.
Right, in their mind.
Absolutely, because they're at a point where they're learning. And so in that sense, like every time he opens his mouth, he's turning somebody away. You know, I think that'll be an effect that we won't see tomorrow, but it's an effect that we will see over the long term.
So with you guys going on tour, with that starting tomorrow and going across the summer, and I know you've even got fall dates lined up, and with this period of where we are right now with politics, with activism, with so many of these themes, like, does that impact your approach to the tour as well? Does it impact the messaging you're bringing on tour, or how do you view that?
I mean, certainly. I mean, there's definitely elements of that, you know, kind of built into our show, our production. But I feel like it's important, you know, it's important for us to kind of carry that on stage and you know, kind of be proud. Because I feel like we're great at doing what we do. In other words, like I wouldn't feel right if we were kind of silenced, you know?
Sure.
So I personally am looking forward to taking that like on stage, on the road, and you know, doing what we do best.
When you guys are on the road and you're able to obviously interact with fans a lot more, like, do you have moments where you maybe get to talk to somebody in the audience, you get to talk to somebody after a show, and you think, like, these people really get it? Like, the people who are coming to our shows actually get what this message is.
Yes, that does happen. If it had only happened once in the last, like, 18 years, it would have been worth it. And the fact that it's right. happened more than once, it's like, I don't remember if I told you the story or not when we talked for the IE, but, like, we were just rehearsing in Chicago, like, a month ago, and I went out to get a coffee, and I got in line behind a guy who had a Rise Against tattoo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, he turned around, and he was like, oh, you know, I was like, hey, what's up?
Yeah.
And, like, we started talking. I'm like, well, where in Chicago are you from? And he's like, I'm not from Chicago. I just flew in. I'm a civil rights lawyer. And I'm here suing corrupt law enforcement, you know, on behalf of the people. Wow. And I was like, what? That's amazing. He goes, well, yeah. He goes, I'm so happy to see you because I just want you to know that, like, your band set me off in this direction.
Dude, I mean, that's like, that is like, I'd be like if somebody was like, what does Tim want for Christmas?
Absolutely. I was like trying not to cry. I was like tearing up. I was like, holy shit, you just made every single lyric I ever wrote worth it, you know? And he was like, you're my hero. And I'm like, no, man, you're my hero. Like, you are the boots on the ground, like in the trenches, like fighting the good fight and mm-hmm. doing it here in my city. Like, you're making this, you're making my city a better place
right.
by finding the bad apples and chucking them, you know?
Yeah.
And like, that's amazing. And so I was like, I don't even know if I was able to impress upon him my full appreciation for it, but I was just like in shock. And I came back to the space and I'm like, dudes, like, I've been gone for like 9 minutes, but I know, like, guess what just happened? You know what I mean?
Right.
It was just such, like, I don't know. And I know that doesn't happen for every single person in a Rise Against crowd. People are kind of banging their heads a little bit and just hanging out. And maybe they heard a song on the radio and they're just there, you know, to see a different band or whatever, which is great too. That's
right,
awesome.
Right,
I welcome all of it. But when you meet people who are like, I get it all, like head to toe, like it sunk in with me, then that's even better.
That is so killer. Now, you guys just got back from Europe recently, last couple days, somewhere
yeah.
in there. Mm-hmm. What was that trip like? Were you playing new songs? Like, what was the reception like? How was that?
Yeah, this is the first time where we actually played three new songs before the record was released. I don't think mm-hmm. we've ever done that.
Right.
'Cause we had these two really small, intimate shows, one in Berlin, one in London. And the reception has been amazing. I mean, it's like, it's always a good feeling when they don't feel like new songs to us as a band.
Yeah.
So you know you're onto something. But yeah, it was awesome.
We kind of grouped them all together too, which we've never done before. We've always kind of doled them out individually, like through the set, you know, trying to like give them a song they'll recognize before or after it so we don't lose them.
Right.
This one we're like, let's just play three brand new ones in a row and just like take it on the head. And that's what we did. And it was amazing, actually. It went off. I think like we like these songs too, and like so that makes a difference. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have good poker faces. We can't like pretend. We can't pretend to like it. You know what I mean? And so like when people see that we're into it, that speaks volumes as well.
And so you know, we're about to start the. We're about like I'm just coming with you guys are about to start the.
Come
tour.
On with. You're
Dude,
welcome.
Don't tempt me.
Yeah,
you're starting the tour with Deftones and Thrice tomorrow here in Chicago. What's on deck for this tour? How are you viewing this? Like, what goes into a Rise Against tour mentally, emotionally? Like, how do you guys prepare for that?
I mean,
this is our first co-headlining tour, or did we co-headline? We'll co-headline with Thursday, I guess.
Yeah.
I want to say, yeah.
And No Alkaline Trio was not Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I keep wrapping my head around that idea, like, that we're co-headlining. This is, like, this is their show, this is our show. We're doing the same size, or the same amount of time every night, mm-hmm. you know? And so we talked about this going over the set list and stuff like that. We're trying to figure out, you know, and like 60 minutes is so hard to try to fit in everything you want to fit
Eight
in.
Albums.
Right. Yeah. I know. Like old stuff, new stuff. It's like so difficult. And I don't know. Like, we struggled with like trying to find the right songs to play because we realized there was a lot of, there's a lot of Deftones fans out there, sure, you know, who are like, maybe want to come to see a Rise Against show, but maybe we can like keep their attention, you know? I don't know. It's this one's a little different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, like, you know, a lot of planning went into the just the production end of it. You know, as opposed to just doing backdrops. So I'm excited to you know, we'll have some video out there, things like that.
Yeah, Chicago gets to see it first.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm, mm-hmm. I cannot wait. And the show in Chicago is at Northerly Island, and I read in an interview, you know, when I was doing my research, being like, who was this band? I was reading an interview I think one of you guys did, and it said that this is the biggest headlining show you've ever done in Chicago. Is that true?
Whoa. Is it?
It is, because we did... The Day to Remember was 8,000.
USC Pavilion.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So this is, in fact, yeah.
How many people are at this show?
Well, it'll be 9,500.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Someone said it was sold out, too, but I don't know if that's... I feel like...
Yeah, I think management said that. Yeah, yeah. I think that might be accurate.
All right. Oh, we're getting a thumbs up from that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the biggest, wow, the biggest hometown show you've ever headlined.
Wow, I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
That is nuts.
That's news to me. It's pretty cool. I remember when Alkaline Trio headlined the Aragon Ballroom on a tour, like, it's probably 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was talking with Brendan Kelly from the Lawrence Arms. Mm-hmm. And he was like a proud father, just like looking in the, he was like looking at him. He was like, he goes, man, this is one of us.
Right.
This is one of us up there in this room that holds the radio bands and the other bands, the bands from LA and New York and like that kind of thing. Like,
this means
is,
something.
Like, this is the first time, like, he was looking at it like, this is the first time somebody from our world has like walked on that stage and not as an opener, you know, but as the person who closed that night. And I was thinking about that. I was like, wow, yeah, like, you're right. This is like our tribe. And so to see, like, I consider, you know, guys like Brandon and Skiba and Trio and Danny and all those guys like family, like from our own little Chicago gang, you know?
Right.
And so to have that happen, like, and have this happen tomorrow night, you know?
Yeah.
This guy's excited. The ambulance is excited about it.
Right.
I can tell. the paramedics are super excited.
Chicago element to have the ambulance in the background.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I think we have some... Do we have any questions? All right, so we'll take a couple questions in a minute. I just want to wrap up with one or two more. You know, you guys have been a band coming up on about almost two decades. You're 8 records in. You've had a really accomplished career, and it's significant. Like, what have been some of the highlights? You know, I mean, things like meeting the guy with the tattoo. Like, what have been some of the things that really stand out when you look back at the whole of what Rise Against has been through? Not to put you on the spot, but like, what does it all mean?
I mean, there are definitely a few milestones that stick out. The fact that we signed to a major in the wake of a lot of bands signing, and it worked.
You know, yeah.
The point of us signing actually worked. We've never demoed for the label, ever. We just did our thing, and we were successful in that regard. Opening for Foo Fighters in Australia and the East Coast, mm-hmm. amazing. Being able to bring out bands that we grew up listening to, like Rancid, Bad mm-hmm. Religion. I mean, those are milestones for me.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Being able to meet our heroes, too.
Yeah.
Because one thing to like play in a successful band... And then another thing to play in a successful band that the guys you grew up with have validated,
yeah,
by taking you on tour or saying I like your stuff,
yeah,
you know, because like we could be successful musicians in some other genre,
yeah,
always pining for like a Bad Religion show to like, you know, pretend like to give us some, like the nod, you know, but the fact is we've met all of our heroes and like to have them, you know, be into what we do. That's the kind of stuff that never. It never sort of gets old, never makes you like not, you know, we were in South America last, two weeks ago with Chuck D from Public Enemy.
Yeah.
And he was like telling us that we were dope. And it was like, holy shit. You know what I mean?
Like, did teenage
can I get that in writing,
in
Mr. D?
You know? Ever think.
Yeah. That Chuck D would be like, you guys are dope. You know, just like, that's just that, there's nothing about that ever becomes normal.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So let's take a couple of questions. So my brother Tomas here is running the stream.
Cool.
If you want to tell us what some of, like, give us a good question, I'll repeat it into the mic, and tell us who is saying it.
This is from Zach Yenchik. How did it feel recording Wolves in an area where the majority of people are right-leaning? Did it affect the writing or recording in any way?
All right, so Zach wants to know how it was recording Wolves in Nashville, where it's a different political climate. It's a lot more right-leaning than, obviously, Rise Against is.
Yeah, and not just politically, but Nashville's a different place musically as well. Mm-hmm. So there was, like, all kinds of elements, and I Nashville did a really good job at making Rise Against feel like Black Sheep. You know what I mean? The Black Sheep, but, like, you know, just, like, the loner at the party. You know what I mean? And... But I will say that that's kind of where Rise Against feels most comfortable sometimes.
Yeah.
It's like where we do our best work. And so to be there out of our element, you know, I was just talking to Q101 about this. And like when you surround yourself with people just like you, mm-hmm. it's easy to forget who you are.
Right.
And when you surround yourself or you end up in a situation where there are people not like you, it reminds you who you are. And it was like, oh shit, like Rise Against, like, we have sharper edges than these bands and these mm-hmm. people. You know, we have a different identity. You know what I mean? We do something different, and let's double down on those differences instead of trying to become like the environment around us. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do. We'll do like one or two more. Because I know you guys got
all good.
Yeah.
Lucas, how do you think your new record would have been affected if the election had gone the other way?
Yeah, so Lucas wants to know, how would the record have changed if Hillary had won?
That's a good question.
It's just 12 happy songs. Sounds like a Maroon 5 record.
Right, totally, yeah. Well, it was interesting sitting down to do a Rise Against record in an era where progressive politics were starting to win the day. You know what I mean? And certainly there were a lot more battles on the horizon to fight. And I would say it would have been different, because there were times where I struggled with, like, where do we fit into this? Where does the Rise Against narrative fit into 2017? You know, mm-hmm. What should we be pushing for? The election made those answers a lot more crystal clear. But, like, before that, it wasn't as crystal clear. And so I don't know, to be honest. I was in the middle of sort of formulating those lyrics when the election happened, and it sort of, like... It just like flipped my chess table up, and it was like start over.
Yeah, we actually didn't work the day of the election because we were so much in shock.
Yeah,
absolutely. We were all kind of like, whoa, because we were just like, it took us by surprise. So you were just starting to think about all the things you hadn't thought about, like what's this going to mean for this, and this. You know,
yeah.
What's it going to mean for like our kids? You
right.
know what I mean? Like, what's it going to mean to have this guy who is, you know, he's kind of has a foot in the door for all these sexist and racist ideas, and what that's going to mean going forward in this country. What's it going to mean for us as Americans traveling abroad? You know what I mean? Like going to different countries, which we're starting to do now, and having to apologize for this president left and right, you know, it makes our life harder. People around the world already have this stereotype as Americans. You know what I mean?
It's not helping.
And and the stereotype is this guy, you know what I mean? And so it's a great question, and then, you know, we never made it all the way down that road, so I don't even know.
Yeah. Let's do one more really good one, and then I know the guys have got to go.
This is from Candace.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys feel is the most important song you've ever written?
So Candace wants to know what the most important Rise Against song ever written is to you guys.
I mean, it's difficult, because it depends on... I mean, you know, it depends on the person, right? It depends on what's important to you as a person, as a listener. I don't know. I mean, Tim, do you have...
Yeah, it's tricky, because, like, there are songs that purely sonically help define our sound and, like, got us... Because I always say, like, your politics are really... Unless you have a great song, no one's ever going to hear your politics. No one's ever going to hear your message. You could put a great message in a really crappy song, and no one's ever going to make it to the song or hit play, you know? So... The music is important. I guess to answer that question, I would go by the song where the reactions to the song are the most meaningful to me or the most moving to me. And the last time that really happened was when we did Make It Stop, September's Children.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to write a song that was touching on like homophobia in the rock scene and touching on like the fact that the rock scene needs to make a statement about that condemns homophobia. And that's what Make It Stop was meant to be. And it really hit a nerve, like, throughout our whole scene, you know, and it let me know like that song was really needed, but it surprised me how many people really didn't need it and they were looking for a statement like that. And to this day, you know, like being on stage and seeing people like tear up during the song, it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like I don't claim to know about that struggle, but I wanted to write a song and let people know, like, if you, whatever walk of life you are welcome at these shows. And I didn't realize how much that statement was needed till I saw people's reactions.
Survive for me. It's a very therapeutic song for a lot of people, and I feel like that was, you know, that definitely is up there with, you know, what I consider an important song that we've written.
Yeah. This has been killer. I mean, I could talk to you guys all day, but but you got a lot to do. The new record is called Wolves. You guys are going on tour with the Deftones and Thrice this summer. You're doing a fall tour, right? With a who are you going out with?
Oh, we have a European or no? We have a the fall tour with
Pierce the Veil.
Pierce the Veil, yeah.
And was it White Lung on that?
White Lung,
yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. Pierce the Veil and White Lung. So we won't play Chicago on that tour, but we'll play a lot of places that we're gonna miss.
Janesville, Wisconsin.
Oh yeah, come out to Janesville. Yeah. Come to the Sonic Boom Festival, yeah. Chicago. Like, come on,
that's close.
Do it.
Tim and Joe, Rise Against, and I have to say this real quick while I have you guys. I've been interviewing you guys for a long time, and I feel very fortunate to have done that. I got to do that via Q101 when Chris Payne and I worked on the local show, and I have to say this is really important to me. Like, I was a producer, I was behind the scenes, so I didn't really do a lot of interviews. And it was you guys and Fall Out Boy that were really like the bands that allowed me to step into that role and start being not the guy behind the scenes, but like being on the mic. So I owe you guys a huge amount as well. And thank you for always taking the time, man. It means so much.
Well, you go around the world and you talk to a lot of jokers who call themselves journalists, and you come to appreciate a little more every day.
Yeah. guys, have an incredible tour. I can't wait to see the show tomorrow night at Northerly Island, the biggest hometown show Rise Against has ever headlined. Tim and Joe, thank you guys so much for being here.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a production of Dynasty Podcast. Find more Dynasty Podcasts at dynastypodcast.com. For the Dynamic Dynasty, Dynasty Descend.